I've been looking forward to this for a long time. It has been too long since David Icke has been on the program. David is, without question, in my view, and the view of millions of others, one of the truly great communicators, one of the most brilliant conspiracy researchers of our time. He has proven that for many, many years. I remember a long time ago having the pleasure of introducing him to a live performance audience in Santa Barbara. And he was at that time and remains to this day singular in his ability to make the point of control, how it's done, who's doing it, and what we can do to try to break it. His brand new book is called The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It. The book is shipping now. It is brand new. It investigates and examines many subjects and aspects of the conspiracy and connects the dots. The picture that appears, once you understand how it all fits together, is astounding. It goes so far beyond what the average person is even able to try to wrap his or her mind about. But it's there. This is the book that will wake up the masses, hopefully, and reveal at last, in an undeniable way, the incredible level of control a covert and evil controlling force has had over humanity for literally thousands of years. So let's, first of all, see how the man is at 4 a.m. UK time. How are you?
Hello, Jeff. Yeah, I'm just waking up, actually, because the call came an hour before I thought it was going to come, so I thought you were my wake-up call.
Well,
maybe you are.
I can do that, you see. But as far as wake-up calls go, my friend, you have given millions of people their wake-up call, and I guess I could ask you in just general terms, how is the wake-up process going? I mean, given the fact that we're dealing with the most ruthless, vicious technological thumb that has ever been put over humanity. I mean, it is an incredible mechanism. They, the other side, have indeed everything they could ever dream of to try to do what they're doing. And they're doing a damn good job of it, by and large. They're brilliant at it.
They are. They're very clever, but they're stupid. They're clever, but they're not wise. And cleverness without wisdom, of course, is the most destructive force on Earth. And if you start accessing wisdom, then you take a position of great power over cleverness. It's very clever, for instance, to be able to create an atomic weapon, but it's wisdom that says we won't do it. So these people are very clever. They're very intellectually clever. But in terms of wisdom, they're just stupid.
Yes, they are stupid. And that, of course, goes hand in hand with what I've always said about intelligence and wisdom are not necessarily bedfellows. It also harkens back to the length of time that people have been doing this. And I mean people, blue blood people, whoever and whatever their genesis really is. What is your current take, David, on the genesis of the evil that has been at work for so very long? And if you can, we have an excellent connection, but pull the receiver back a little bit. I think it will be even clearer.
Okay. The more that I go down this road, and I've been on a journey for nearly 20 years of following this. And
when did we first? How long ago did we meet? I've forgotten now. When were you first?
1996, Jeff, actually. 1996,
yeah.
And it's interesting. You know, your earlier question and the point you made about Santa Barbara. There were a few people turned up at Santa Barbara, and that was rare, actually, because in those days, and the years before, when I was talking in Britain, you know, I was putting the chairs out. No one was sitting on them. I was putting the chairs away and going home, poorer than when I arrived. And it was a time when I thought banging your head against the wall's no fun. But since 9/11, and even another boost after. It was very clear that we were lied into the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have had a reality check. It's like people know things, but they need reminding. So,
The attention span problem is a big one. Yeah,
we have this cliche that you can't believe what you read in the papers, and politicians lie. And I think that although we have this understanding, it kind of, you know, goes into the subconscious, and we actually believe them sometimes. And I think the whole business of Iraq has given people a massive reminder that not only do they lie to the extent that we slaughter unbelievable amounts of people.
Over a million people.
Yeah, and this combination, and also, it's one of the reasons I wrote this book. I've had this feeling for gathering, particularly since 9/11, and getting bigger all the time, that there is this gathering feeling among enormous numbers of people, because the interest in my stuff has just absolutely exploded, that something's not right in the world.
Oh, yeah.
There's an unease. I don't like what's happening. And all the time they're seeing more Orwellian-type legislation being passed.
Oh, especially in your country, for God's sakes. From the cameras to the trash collectors who can now stop automobiles and actually impound family cars if they think there's an illegal trash bag in the back, in the boot. This is ridiculous.
It is unbelievable what's happening here. And, of course, it's what I call the totalitarian tiptoe. It's done one after the other, after the other, after the other, and it's accumulative. And
and
when you stop and look back and you think, hey, look how far we've come. And all this has come together to create this unease. It's like, hold on a minute, what's going on here? And so we are in a window of opportunity where minds are seriously open to things that they would never have looked at before. And it's my challenge now. Well, I've got many challenges of people trying to undermine me, of course, you get that, but I my biggest challenge is no longer putting the chairs out and thinking, is anyone going to sit on them? Oh no, okay, I'll talk to myself. But coping with the opportunities and the demands on your time to actually talk about this stuff. So, you know, we definitely are in a period of great change. And funnily enough, in the very early days of this, when about 1990, that kind of time, when I had my shall we say awakening, wasn't so much an awakening as a missile hit my consciousness and you know, just shook it awake. In a way that was very difficult to cope with for a while. When I was in that period, what I was coming across over and over was, through various means, was that there was coming an energetic change that was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock, and it was going to wake people up from their amnesia, because that's what it is. When we talk about people waking up, which is literally from a collective amnesia, and the more that I research this and get deeper and deeper into it, that's the bottom line of this conspiracy. Yes, it's about banking scams. Yes, it's about political scams and manipulated wars, but the bottom line is the manipulation of humanity's imagination of itself and its reality, its sense of reality, because your sense of reality becomes your experienced reality. If you believe you're powerless, that's your reality.
Your sense of reality becomes your reality.
Exactly.
That's really an important concept that all of you out there need to hang on to. Your sense of reality is in fact your reality. Now, where do we all get our sense of reality? From the mass media, and most prominently, the most vicious weapon ever unleashed, and that weapon is television.
Exactly, I've likened it in the book to a collective version of people on a stage in a stage hypnotist show.
Ah, yes.
What the stage hypnotist is doing is implanting a belief into the consciousness, the subconscious of the stooge, and the belief edits reality. I mean, this is psychological, mainstream now. Your belief edits reality. So if you can control what someone believes,
right,
you control their sense of reality. Very simple, basic example. If you can control the sense of reality that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction that are capable of hitting Western countries, then your reality will be, we must do something about this. And that's not just a basic level, but it goes much, much deeper than that. So
correct.
The whole thing is about implanting a sense of reality, so it becomes our experienced reality. And this is the depth of knowledge, psychological, and how we create reality, that is passed over at the highest level of this secret society network from generation to generation to continue it.
You know, they're using that very same template now with painful obviousness with Iran. I mean, they're saying the same things, using the same phrases, the same cliches, and unfortunately, they're calling up from people a stored responsive memory pattern that was drilled into them before. Even though people may superficially, in many cases, know it was a lie, they're still hearing it, and again, you repeat the same thing over and over and over, and what happens? It tends to become someone's reality again.
Exactly.
It's amazing. David Icke is with us, our friend of so many years. He's live and awake in the UK. We'll be right back with more in just a couple minutes. Do remember to go to his website. His brand new book is available right now and shipping for all of you folks who really love and respect David's work. The new book is Rolling, The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It. Hi, David. Let's take a look at the earlier roots of this evil that is running so rampant around much of the planet, if not most of it now. What is the genesis of it in your mind? I remember the program we did, the wonderful program with Credo Mutwa, live from Africa, and you were in England, I guess. We did a three-way, and it was just unforgettable. People still talk about that program, by the way.
But yeah, he's still going. Kind of okay, and continuing to battle on, even though he's now into his late 80s, and
yeah.
He's one of the most incredible people I've ever met in my life.
And he's remarkable. So what are we doing about the genesis of the evil? It's a different consciousness than you and I relate to, and I don't know where it came from or what your current views on it are, but I'd sure like to hear them.
Well, there's different levels of it, because if you look at the five-sense level, if you like, you're looking at a series of, or a network of interbreeding bloodlines that can be very comfortably now charted back to ancient Babylon and Sumer and other parts of the world, where it would seem there was an external intervention, what people might call extraterrestrial. I prefer to call it interdimensional, where there was an interbreeding with humans to create a hybrid bloodline, a hybrid DNA.
Genetics, definitely.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And of course, this is what I go into in the book quite a bit, because it's very, very important. The body is a biological computer. By that, I mean it has the ability to, more than a desktop, because of course it's slightly more advanced than that, to work things out and to think for itself up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this with the way, on a simple level, the body reacts to attack and disease. It reacts in a way that it's communicating with itself to respond to the challenge. So it's something that is programmable. And within the DNA, what you might call the hard drive of the computer,
mm-hmm.
are character traits, are physical traits, these enormous amounts of information, which mainstream scientists don't even begin to understand yet. Most of DNA, they don't even know what it does. And so what you're looking at, on if you like, if we keep the computer analogy going, is when you are when you have a DNA, a hard drive, you have a hard drive of information. And this information affects behavior, and it affects reality. And so when you have this interbreeding, on one level we see flesh and blood and all that stuff, but on another level it's actually downloading, a program is downloading information. Mm-hmm. And there's particular traits in this hybrid DNA that are different to the mainstream. And one of them, and this really explains so much, Jeff, is a lack of empathy. They do not filter reality like we do. For instance, we have a fail-safe mechanism, mm-hmm. which is empathy with people suffering the consequences of our actions.
Right.
If you take that empathy away, mm-hmm. then all bets are off.
Become the sociopath.
Exactly. They'd never kill 3,000 people of their own people. Oh no, they'd never kill people on. Oh please, you know, you wouldn't. This is the point I keep trying to get across. Don't judge what these guys would do by what you would do, because they ain't the same.
But David, excuse me, you're right. People just don't understand. They, the other side, the enemy, know very, very well that the average person thinks reflexively that everyone else is basically just like him or her, just
exactly.
about the same. But they're not. They have no conscience. They have no morality. I have a personal theory that they actually enjoy killing and watching suffering of the rest of us, that they get off on that.
I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that that's the case. I've said that in the book. They love it. I mean, a war is like a feeding frenzy to these people, because they have this genetic difference. And so there was this interbreeding, and it has expanded its control. And of course, you look into any ancient culture, and you'll find the same recurring story, which is of an interbreeding between a human and a non-human race that created these hybrid bloodlines. And the hybrid bloodlines became the royalty, the genetically special people who claim their right to rule because of their genetic connection to, quote, the gods. Mm-hmm. This whole thing about the divine right to rule comes from this. Of course, it's not the divine, the consciousness that they get it from, but it is literally this non-human race. And it expanded out of, ironically and appropriately and not coincidentally, out of what we now call Iraq, Babylon, Sumer, and that area massively. Mm-hmm. And it moved up into Europe. It became the Roman Empire, and up further into Europe, and they became the British Empire. And through the British Empire and the other European empires, but particularly the British, they expanded their control all over the world. And of course, it was said the sun never set on the British Empire, so vast was it.
And it is also said, as we have to break, that there is no more ruthless people on the planet than the Brits when it comes to suppressing, subjugating, and killing those that they have need to do. I mean, look at South Africa, Lord Kitchener, and all the rest of it. They just
absolutely. But you know, we're very good, really. You know, we're very good for the world. You know.
Yeah, of course. All right, stand by. David Icke is here, and we'll be right back with all of you folks in just a couple minutes. Remember, David's new book is just out and just now shipping. So click on David's name, or just remember davidicke.com. That's I-C-K-E. And you can go right there. The Global Conspiracy, David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy, is available. Talking about the evil on this planet. It is an evil that is certainly a bloodline evil, but it has spilled over through the media and inoculated hundreds of millions of people who are more than willing to carry out the orders of the evildoers, and they themselves become, of course, de facto just as sociopathic and evil. In America, in this so-called war, this slaughter of a sovereign nation, Iraq, is sowing a terrible crop and a harvest of deformed and defamed and destroyed human psyches are going to be coming back to the United States by the tens and then hundreds of thousands, and these people are literally ruined for life, not to mention, as I said earlier, the 1.2 million Iraqis who have been ruined permanently. They're gone. I mean, it goes on and on, David, the evil. Evil is running amok, and those who are still good and those who are still kind, of course, are made to feel very much out of it by their peers now in the schools. The programming and conditioning is so ruthless with our children. We could talk all night about this stuff. I don't know how to turn our young people away from a destination that is going to bring them to literally intellectual incompetence. Many of them are already there. They have vocabularies of 400 or 500 words if they're lucky. I see attacks and probing efforts coming from evil all over the map now. I have never seen so many attacks and so much effort put into destroying a civilization, a way of life. And it's not encouraging.
Well, that's why, you know, we have now not a situation where you're predicting this will happen. It's actually daily experience. And I say to people, do you think all this is happening all over the world at the same time by some amazing coincidence? Are you a coincidence theorist? This seems to, the world seems to have been taken over by coincidence theorists. One of the key things that I would stress about young people is that we are now, you, me, and people of our generation, we are the last generation who are going to have a coordinate so that we can remember how much freer the world was and how it used to be.
Extremely important point, folks. You're right.
Compared with now, because we are now, we have of course we do, when we're born and we grow up, we perceive the world that we then experience as the world, the way things are. This is how it is. And we can see how vastly it has changed, how massively basic freedoms are being eliminated. But if you're born into this world now, and you start to become conscious of it a few years from now, you are not going to have that coordinate of how it used to be. Cameras in the schools, microchipping, constant control, constant surveillance, laws to stop you, to see what's in your trash and all this stuff. This is going to be, oh, this is how it is, this is life, this is what the world's like. Well, it's what the world's like now, but it wasn't what it was like. So it's really, really a vital time, actually not just for those challenging this imposition, this fascism, but for those trying to impose it, this is a point where they really have a timescale to impose this over the next 5-10 years. And I feel personally that Hillary Clinton is very important to this. I think that she's being brought forward to be a major figure in this crucial time. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, if she's elected, she will have up to 2012, and then if she's re-elected, up to 2016. Now, that period is absolutely crucial to these people. That's when they want this whole global structure of imposition overwhelmingly in place. And what we're in a situation now is that we have the immovable object, which is what they think they are, and the irresistible force, which is really is, of people awakening to their true nature. Mm-hmm. And these two are now looking each other in the eye, and even more closely in the next few years. So
you mentioned a collective unconscious, David, and that awakening is really occurring from the unconscious collectively all the way up to the conscious state. I think it's a thorough awakening.
It absolutely is. I mean, my experience, I'm a bit of a barometer for this, really. People who would have laughed in my face not that long ago are now reading my books. Because people, it's like, I've talked for years about people being in an eggshell. And we are multidimensional consciousness. But the idea is to disconnect our awareness from that multidimensional level and focus attention. This is the big thing. Focus attention on the five-sense reality. And if you look at the way society is structured, it's all about enticing and encouraging the five-sense level, the five senses.
Yeah.
Now, if you can isolate the five senses from the multidimensional level of ourselves, and then what happens when you're in five sense mode, what I call body consciousness, you are looking for your fix on life to information that comes in through the eyes and the ears, because that's your level of operation. Now, as you quite rightly said a few minutes ago, who controls that? So the whole package of manipulation, if you like, the foundation of it, mm-hmm. is to first of all isolate people from their multidimensional self, lock their attention into the five senses, and then control the information the five senses receive, because what you're then doing is programming the computer to see reality the way you want. Now, what happens when we literally awaken is that multi-dimensional levels of consciousness start getting their hands on the wheel of perception, and you move your point of observation. This is crucial. Your point of observation decides your reality. I mean, you can look at a situation from one point of observation and you see it in a certain way. You move that point of observation, you see it in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what's happening. And when people say to me, and they're saying it in enormous numbers now, why didn't I see it before?
Mm-hmm.
It's because you were, your point of observation was body reality, and now it's higher consciousness reality, so your point of observation's changed. That's why you're seeing the world completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the key. I mean, we can talk about how we react to this on a five-sense level, but we can run around like headless chickens trying to do that. Once you become conscious, because most people are conscious in the sense of they're body conscious, but they're not multi-dimensionally conscious, and so
The taste, David talks about senses, the visual stimulation, the audio stimulation, the tactile stimulation, it's all there, and it, as we've been talking about, in England, the cams now, of which there are millions of them, are able to watch, to listen, and now to speak to the people in the streets, and they tell them what to do. It's amazing. And no demonstrations in the streets about it. Nothing. Be right back.
For years, you've been hearing about Herbal Healer Academy and how it's remained the leader in effective, alternative, and natural...
What to do? It's amazing. And no demonstrations in the streets about it. Nothing. Be right back. Back with David Icke, and again, David's brand new book is shipping now, so let's get a copy. All right, the issue of control and inoculation. Don't just think the kind of things that are shoved into little children's bodies. By the way, David, over here in the States, the federal government's Well Baby program, or Well Child program, now calls for over 70 vaccines that are mandatory if you're going to follow the program, and that's between the age of, well, birth and 16 or so. 70 now. And the outrage, of course, of the moment happens to be the Gardasil, so-called anti-cancer vaccine given to little girls. There are, in Australia now, 8 little girls dead already, hundreds injured. I think in the UK, 3 dead. But, I mean, this is so evil. It's eugenics in a way, although it's not called that. But all these vaccines are cumulative in their effect. The thimerosal, the mercury in them, is absolutely, totally catastrophic to the, well, look at the autism. Anyway, it's a long story. But the vaccination, is physical in the control mechanism, and it is psychological. And as you mentioned so eloquently, the five senses are the key doorways to get in and take control.
Funny enough, I go into this in the new book in some detail, because there are 28 chapters, and I actually call the chapters dots instead of chapters, because this is what we need to do, is to connect the dots, because then the individual dots look very different when they're connected to the other ones. And this is a very, very important point that you raise. Going back to what I said earlier, the body is a biological computer, and it is a vehicle for consciousness to express itself in this reality. If we didn't have the body computer, then we couldn't pick things up, because our consciousness is vibrating to a very different frequency to, you know, a cup or a knife and fork. And therefore, if you take the analogy of a brilliant computer operator, symbolic of high consciousness, sitting at a computer that is not functioning, that's malfunctioning, that's got a virus in it, then no matter how good that programmer is, he's not going to be able to get through that computer the true depth and detail of what he's trying to express. And it's a very similar analogy with what's going on.
What a great analogy. All the viruses being injected into society and individually, that's what they are. Perfect.
Exactly. The dot or chapter where I go into this, I've actually called access codes. Because this is what they are. They're access codes to the body computer. So the body operates electrochemically. So if you can disrupt the electrical and the therefore the chemical level of the body, you are literally putting a massive computer virus or viruses into it, and it's going to malfunction. So what is happening now is we're having this assault, particularly on young people, because we're now going into this period where this awakening, while we're seeing, oh yes, all the Orwellian stuff coming in, at the same time, this awakening is gathering very fast, and they're trying to suppress it by making the computer malfunction so that this awakening consciousness can't express its full magnitude through into this reality. This is what the microchip's about. This is what they want. Why they want every child microchipped at birth, so that they can get access massively through a microchip to the body computer. And so what is happening is that we're having children bombarded with all this absolute chemical, unbelievable, horrific stuff through what they eat, through what they drink. Mm-hmm. And also electromagnetically, we've created this electromagnetic soup that we're existing in now, with all the electromagnetic sources and microwave sources.
David, let me say one thing about that. You are so right, and we've talked about this. I think what you're getting already tonight from David Icke is the totality of the problems at hand. But more than that, 100 years ago, give or take, there really were no electromagnetic fields to worry about. You get a little bit from lightning, a little bit from solar activity, but the Earth was empty. And now, as David said, we are in a fishbowl of it, and the body cannot adapt to it. The individual cells of the body spend a great deal of their energy trying to maintain a delicate cellular membrane balance of positive and negatively charged elements, and these waves go right through the body, photons, and disrupt and destroy the cell's balance, and so the immune systems are dragged down. I mean, this is just one of the negative aspects of this terrible EMF assault on our physical bodies.
Yeah, I've started to study the way the body works at some length, because to understand the computer nature of it, what the body is, it is a system of communication of information and decoding that information. Now, what we call the meridian lines, which carry energy through the body, they are like the body's motherboard, and they are passing information around the body. Now, what has been shown, that when that Of course, this is what acupuncture works on, by putting the needles in and other methods. It is balancing and keeping the flow of that energy working to optimum efficiency. Now, what happens is, if that flow of energy, or qi, or what the Chinese call it, is affected in terms of that its speed of flow and its balance of flow, then information is not being passed around the computer in the way it should. And on a desktop computer, we say, hey, my computer's slow today. Why? Because information is not passing around optimum speed. Mm-hmm. And what this does is start to disrupt the body's communication system. And this doesn't just have physical consequences in multiple ways. It has mental and emotional consequences, because another thing I've gone into in the book, our mental and emotional levels of thought and emotion are actually electrochemical processes at that level. And if you can disrupt the body electrochemically, you are disrupting the way people have emotion and think. I mean, we had an example of a couple of years ago or so of a lady in this country who 40 years ago went into this spontaneous clinical depth of depression and was in and out of institutions for 40 years. 40 years later, someone said to her, can you think of anything that happened about the time this started? And she said, the only thing I can think of, she said, is I had 19 tooth fillings. Maybe you should get the tooth fillings out, mercury, and go on a mercury detox, which she did. After 40 years, her depression lifted almost as quick as it came. This is the power of the ability, through electrochemical means, to affect not just the physical, but the mental and emotional. And this is what's happening to kids. People say, oh, what's happening to kids today? Look at their behavior and all that stuff. Well, hold on a second. Just chart back to when this started, and chart back to when massive amounts of chemical nonsense started being put in the food they eat and drink. Do you think there might be a connection here? I think so. Of course there is. Because what is happening to children today and young people is that they are being, their computers are being malfunctioned by what they are consuming through food and drink and what they are experiencing electromagnetically.
It's absolutely correct. And add to that, I mean, again, I say this is such a multifaceted attack on the individual. The amount of data that is exposed, I'm not talking about substantive data, I'm talking about just data, sensory data, sight, sound. These kids are junked out. They're literally audio, video, amphetamine addicts by the time they're 3-4 years of age. They see these television programs and they are at such a speed, the sound and the pictures and the images and the editing and the flash and the zoom and the reverse zooms and the edit cuts and all that. These kids don't have a chance to sit still, because their little computers are so used to the pace of it. And then, as David's saying, electrochemically, they don't have the tools with which to function properly at all anyhow. So what chance do these kids have except to end up being literally the creations of the controllers? They're so good at it, and it is such a thorough job of obfuscation of reality. It stuns me all the time when I try and wrap my mind about it.
Okay, it comes down, in the end, all this, to a very simple fact. What has happened as these bloodlines have advanced their control and influence across the world is they have sucked out of mainstream society the ancient knowledge which was once widely understood of how the body works and how we create reality. At the same time, they have hoarded that knowledge in the highest levels of their secret society network, and they pass this on, like I said earlier, to the chosen few. So you're in a situation where those manipulating understand what the body is and understand how we create reality, and that the mass of the people are kept in ignorance of that. And this is the reason that they have so much power over us, and this is why the understanding of how we create reality and how the body operates and what it is vital to redressing that balance by redressing the understanding of the mass of the people compared
with
them.
Yeah, and our young people are born into intellectual indentured servitude? And how do you awaken a young mind, 20, 25-year-olds, I don't care how old they are, 30-year-olds, when there's nothing there to awaken, you know, it's just stillborn.
But I think there's a very positive point that comes out of all this. When you look at the scale of bombardment and the multi-level scale of bombardment, it tells you something. It tells you just how powerful we are, just what genius we are behind the amnesia, that they have to go to these levels to keep us asleep.
Where they are rolling
and,
out.
You know, you've only got to break out of this, and suddenly you realize who you really are, and it's much more powerful than these manipulators.
And we've seen so many cases when you take the television away from children, when you take the poison food away from them, when you give them a chance, watch what happens. Just in a week, they begin to grow like flowers that have been denied water and nourishment. They begin to thrive. It's not a big mystery. Be right back with David Icke after this. Okay, welcome back. Talking with David Icke, who's up very early over in the UK. David's new book is out, The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It. It's available for shipping right now at davidicke.com. Is there an 800 number, David, we want to give for U.S. orders?
I don't have one at the moment.
Okay. Book is just now available.
I leave all that to other people. I just write them and then go on, you know, and leave it to others to do that, so.
Right.
I'm the wrong person to ask.
Well, that's okay. We'll get them to the site and they can order from there.
Yeah.
It's a daunting challenge that our parents face today. If, in fact, the parents are even alert enough to discern that they and their children are being programmed. And the daunting challenge is to take your kids out of the matrix and subject them to, of course, peer pressure. But I have a story up on the site, well, just yesterday, I think, that all the rage now for Halloween costumes, David, these are for 9 and 10-year-old girls now, right? They're
right.
Dressing like little hookers, whether it's an E.T. hooker or a pirate hooker, it doesn't matter. They're all showing flesh, they're all this and that, and the parents, some of them, bless them, are appalled. But what can they do except say no, and then there's a war at home, because these kids at 9 and 10 have already been co-opted, they've already been programmed, the little body chemistry and electromagnetic fields have been subverted and taken over. So it's a very difficult chore. The amount of the attack is huge, the directions from which the attacks are coming are almost limitless, and when we start to talk about the electric grid and the potential to run things through that, of course, every home is like a built-in electric programming chamber with 60 hertz running all around them. And we know that the grid has been played with already. We found various waveforms on it that shouldn't be there. So, I mean, they have it. These people are just masters of manipulation. And it's a tough road to follow.
There's a couple of things to that. First of all, it's... Our base state is awake. It's an unnatural state of amnesia that we've been put into.
Correct.
And so they have to work very, very hard to keep us in this amnesic state, especially now with this vibrational change going on that's manifesting itself in great activity in the sun and other phenomena. It's a massive job to hold us.
And they are cranking it up, mate.
They're cranking it up, Jeff, for that very reason, that they know this awakening is happening, and they're trying to put the lid on it, and that's why they're cranking it up in almost a panic-stricken way, throwing everything at us. But
so did you see, David, House of Representatives over here, the H.R. 1955, which surfaced last week. It's the Thought Crime Prevention Bill, so-called, H.R. 1955. It's entitled formally the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007. Now, this one part I want to read to you. We know, you and I, as much as many of our listeners, that without the Internet, it would have been over long ago.
Absolutely.
And Section 3 of H.R. 1955 reads, the Internet has aided in facilitating violent radicalization, ideologically based violence, and the homegrown terrorism process, whatever that is, in the United States by providing access to broad and constant streams, read Internet radio and Internet material, of terrorist-related propaganda to United States citizens. Now, this act makes that a felony, and you can see, obviously, how wide open the interpretation is.
Yeah, because there's many levels to this suppression of the awakening, because that's what it is, the suppression of the awakening. You've got the attacks on the body computer, you've got the microchipping agenda, which they're trying to push as much as possible. And the other level of it is stopping awakening people communicating to others. That's right. Absolutely vital, because if you can stop that, then you're isolating the knowledge that awakening people gather within a small group instead of it being shared. So, on one level, they are terrified of what's going on, and they are running around trying to put fingers in the dike all over the place, and one of them is stop these people communicating this stuff, because it is having an effect. There's no doubt about it. It's having a massive effect.
Correct.
And because the mainstream media, I mean, crikey, it has to be, you know, in letters 24 high with lights and flashing lights on before the media, the mainstream media, see it. And anyway, much of that is suppressed anyway. But outside of the mainstream media, there's a massive, massive change going on in the world in terms of people's perceptions, and they are desperate to stop that. And the Internet's had many benefits for them. It makes surveillance easy, it makes profiles of people easy, but it has a massive downside, and that's the communication of information that you quite rightly say. When you just take a breath and look at it, without the Internet, the scale of understanding of what's going on would be minute compared with what it is now.
We have also, of course, on the Internet, the other side, the controllers attempting to work the net to their advantage, but they're being forced to sow so much disinformation, so much they must have thousands of people, I mean, from the corporate level, from the government level, you name it, intelligence agencies, working the net, trying to confuse. Now, they can't interrupt the flow of information, but they sure can take it to a level of focus that is almost obscene to people trying to make their way through this minefield called information. I mean, it is incredible. You said years ago that one of the most powerful things of all, of course, is the truth, reality, honest information, and that it is reeled out and reeled in by the controllers whenever they feel the need to. And now, with the Internet, it's done so at the speed of light, and the amount of people working the net to slander, libel others, to create fights, to create disinformation, is incredible.
This is a very important point, because I've noticed this. The amount of conflict that's being generated.
Sown. Oh, they'd love it. Yeah.
Between conspiracy researchers and all the rest of it. And I've been writing quite a lot about this in recent weeks, the little game mentality against the big game mentality. And it's so important that those that are working to gather this information and communicate it hold the big game mentality and don't get caught in the little game mentality. And because so much of this conspiracy research arena has fallen into the focus being on what's that conspiracy researcher saying, what's he saying, and is he one of them, is he MI6, is he CIA, all this stuff. It's all little game mentality, in which the conspiracy research arena becomes the game itself and the focus, rather than being the vehicle And we've got to watch this very, very carefully, because there is a tremendous effort to divide and rule those that are working in this arena.
One of the giveaways, of course, is to watch who is attacked with the most vigor on the Internet. Usually those people are doing the best work. This is the common sense stuff. It doesn't take anybody with an advanced degree to figure it out. Let me talk to you a little bit about the economy. This is the current status of the economy, of course, is all of you know it. Gold is going to go to 800. Oil will go over $100 a barrel, maybe even 150 a barrel. But meanwhile, David, the American Stock Exchange, the Dow Jones, is floating along well above 13,000, and everything looks wonderful. Of course, this game is one of the things that you exposed very early on in your work about money, the money game. Let's talk a little bit about the money game and what's happened today and how this comes as no surprise to you and a few others who have been aware of this for a long time.
Well, the money system, and the stock markets and the futures markets, and I always liken it to a Las Vegas casino. You know, when these economics correspondents come on from the City of London or Wall Street and they're given their report of the day, I mean, I'm hearing on another level, you know, that they're talking about blackjack tables and the roulette, because that's what it is. And it's about confidence. That's all it is, confidence. You control the whole financial system by confidence. When people are confident, they'll invest in it. When people are not confident, they withdraw from it. It goes up, it goes down because of confidence. And what controls confidence are the messages coming out from those, quote, experts that are telling people whether they should be confident or whether they shouldn't be confident. And I've watched, you know, with my head shaking in the last few weeks, this appalling piece of work called Alan Greenspan, head of the criminal Federal Reserve, right through so many years and administrations, who has been going around making people, certainly he's been over in this country doing it too, making people feel less and less confident about the future economically.
Oh, yeah.
When that happens, the whole, because it's all based on confidence, it goes down. It's so simple. And what they've done is set up the whole system as an energetic network. They understand that everything is energy, and they've set up the financial system understanding that it's about flows of energy. And you can set it up so that the flows of energy come to you and not to other people. And since what they've done, they've hijacked the whole financial system and the system of exchange, which means they have the choice and the people don't have the choice.
That's right. And if you folks want to have some fun, go into your local bank and ask the bank manager about fractional banking or the Federal Reserve, and watch the blank stare you get back, if you get anything back at all. Hold on, David. We have to pause. We'll do this little bit of business and come right back with David Icke. Next. Financial circus, which is anything but out of control, ladies and gentlemen. Don't think for a minute that this is all happening at random, because it's not, is it, David?
No, I mean, when you're moving trillions of dollars around the markets every day, you decide if it goes up or it goes down. And people say, well, why would they push the markets down? Well, first of all, there's a bigger picture than just money and markets. It's a vehicle to control and manipulate. But also, if you push markets down, and you know you're going to do that because you're activating it, then you get out of things and let them go down. And then you get back in and buy up vast amounts more stock and control at a few cents on the dollar.
I've done this so many times.
And then you push the market back up again.
Yeah.
You know, I used to speak at some financial conferences years ago about the way that the financial world was manipulated. And this guy came up to me after one who made his money out of investing in the stock market, futures markets, etc. And he said, "Oh, sounds a bit far-fetched to me, mate." He said, "But I'll watch it. I'll watch it. I'll think about it." And I met him about 3-4 months later, and he said, "It's amazing." He said, "I found that the major players were getting out of areas and into other areas about 3 days or so before Greenspan, then head of the Federal Reserve, made a financial statement." He said, "And every time, the effect of the statement was to push up what they got into and push down what they got out of." And because they're writing a statement, you're quite right. This is not anything to do with random good or bad luck in the markets. This is fundamental manipulation. And of course, people say, "Oh, the stock market's doing well." Yes, why is the stock market doing well? Because people have been manipulated to be confident about it. But you have just one or two shocks, quote, financially, and you'll see the market collapse. It can collapse in days. Because it's a house of cards. I always think of the financial system as like those cartoons where there's cartoon characters chasing each other and they run off the edge of the cliff. And even though they're on fresh air, they keep moving forward until someone stops and looks down and realizes that there's no land there. And then they all crash down. And that's what the economic system's like. And we're fast approaching the point where people are going to look down and go, "Whoa, well, there's no land." Mm-hmm. And because the thing about control is the greatest form of it is fear. And when you get people in fear, they look outside of themselves for someone or something to protect them from what they fear.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so so fundamental to life on Earth is money, and because it's the exchange mechanism for daily life. And if you can get people in a state of fear over money, mm-hmm. i.e., survival. This is such an important, God, this is such an important area. The reptilian brain, the oldest part of the human brain, is one of its key functions is survival, which is a good thing, because without that instinctive survival mechanism, we wouldn't last very long. But if you can manipulate that and make survival the actual focus of people's lives. And because of the nature of the way it all works, if you get people in survival mode, fear of not surviving, you're locking their point of observation into the reptilian brain, which is an area of the brain that these people focus on and to a large extent manipulate us through.
But because they know it so well.
Exactly. And so they need people in survival mode, which is one of the things I really kind of get across in this book. We do not have to survive because we cannot do anything but survive. We are consciousness. It's when you bring your point of observation down to the five senses, you can talk about surviving. Is my body computer going to stay alive or not? What's going to happen? Yeah, because survival, the fear of not surviving, brings you down to body consciousness, because that's the only thing that is comes and goes. And we perceive survive or not survive, but we cannot do anything but survive because we are consciousness, infinite eternal consciousness. And when you move your point of observation there is no discussion about survival or not survival, because you can only survive.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, the threat to take away the sensory stimuli for the five senses is really at the root of most fear if you distill it. Think about it.
Exactly. Anything. If you really analyze this, Jeff, on its multi levels, all comes down to one thing: is holding people in body consciousness. And you mentioned something earlier about children and Halloween and the sexual dresses and all that stuff. This is another vital point which I go into in the book. We have two areas of the brain. There's the left brain, which is very much this world, language, what we bravely call logic and all this stuff. And then we've got the right brain, which is the creative, which is the out there, which is the unique spin on life. What they want is to lock people into the left brain. And when you look at the education system, yeah, it is all about locking people into the left brain. Here's some information, put it in the left brain, hold it there, and when I give you a shout, regurgitate it onto this piece of paper in an exam, and if you do that really well, then you'll be very successful and you'll become a doctor or a lawyer, all these things. Now, what they're doing now with children is they want to start this process as early as possible. And what they're doing as a result is seeking to take childhood away. To get people into children into adult mode, left brain mode, as early as possible. Because play is the classic ad-libbing of life, which opens up the channels to the right brain.
There you go.
What it does.
The creative side.
And they're trying to suppress that.
Yeah, they are.
By taking childhood away.
They are. It's so outrageous. It's one of the few things that just gets me almost speechless with anger. Taking children away from their childhood. Be right back in just a couple minutes with David Icke. Feel the wonder, the fantasy of childhood from children. There's nothing more heinous than that in my book. I don't know how you view it, David. I'm sure we're on the same page. But it's to see these little children forced, literally forced, through constant sensory programming, through the media, especially the television, and reinforced how, and you pointed this out so brilliantly so many years ago, reinforced by their peers. The controllers don't really have to worry much. They sow the seeds, they keep the general programming up, and it's the policemen are the very people being programmed. It's amazing.
Yeah, this is the system whereby people are in fear of being different, and people are targeted for being different. And there are many psychological reasons for this. First of all, you know, there's the basic one of the fear of what other people think, because you're not getting your insecurity within your security, rather, within yourself. This is me, and if you don't like it, well, so what? This is me. You're looking for external confirmation for your security.
And that's, if I might say one quick thing, that's why our young women now are so obsessed with their appearance.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And I mean, you know, that I've seen various programs in this country of what happens to kids at school if they haven't got the designer trainers, but they've got other trainers that are perfectly adequate but are not the designer brand.
Yep.
They get targeted and all this stuff. And so there's that level of it where people are in fear of what other people think. But then there's another level of it, comes the other way, is that people on a subconscious level are irritated by people who are standing out from the crowd, because on some level that makes them feel bad about the fact that they are in the crowd, that they are a clone, that they are just following the herd. And it's a subconscious thing, but this is one of the reasons that people get irritated by someone standing up and being different. It says something about them which they don't like. And it's so important that people stand up and speak their truth, because it doesn't matter what people think of you, because they'll think something else tomorrow. It matters what you think of you, and standing up for what you feel is right and speaking your truth. And if other people don't like it, well, they'll have to do the other thing. And I found that over my experience over the years, that if you keep speaking your truth, if it has validity, it will eventually be shown to be so. And there was a television program on British television, I don't know, it must be about 9 months ago, maybe a bit longer, called David Icke, Was He Right? And this was based on the fact that years and years ago, I spoke in Belfast, Ireland, in, I think it was 1994, hardly anyone came, But one person did, and he was a student from the local university. He goes on to be a television producer. He realizes after 9/11 that what he heard at that meeting in 1994 was happening, and he makes a program looking at was I possibly right rather than mad, which is how I was promoted for a long time in Britain. So if I had not stood up in 1994 when no one wanted to know and spoke my truth, even though people were laughing and ridiculing all the rest of it, then that program would never have happened then, and it's awakened a lot of people. So if you keep speaking your truth, eventually you'll get your reward. The big point to make is, if you don't speak your truth, how can you get any reward for not doing anything? Change only comes about by those that stand up and speak against the prevailing order, and we need more and more of those people, because what we have now is a massive increase and daily increasing in the number of people who are aware of different levels or some level of what's going on because of what we've been talking about tonight. What we need is those people not to be cul-de-sacs for that information, but to be communicators of it. And it's people say, how do I do it? And all you do is speak your truth. And some people will react not good, and some people will go, hey, that makes sense to me. And it's being at peace with either reaction, because it's just information, and we need more and more people to do this, because then the exponential curve starts going to the sky once that happens.
Look at our young kids, though, and I guess go back to this, because they are the future. They're being assaulted, taken over, and remade. It's like terraforming. They're 9 and 10 years old. If the parents try to instill structure, the kids are now full of four-letter words. They're not afraid to use them. They'll threaten their parents. They'll threaten their teachers. They're being poisoned with food. They're being poisoned with vaccinations. They're being poisoned visually, sonically, by the media. They're being poisoned by peer pressure, and it's all underwritten and underpinned with fear of being different. You're so right about this. And I don't know how you get through to a child to give them the strength to stand up to the group, to the hive mentality. And did you hear about the laws in California that Governor Schwarzenegger signed a few weeks ago?
What was that?
Well, they now, as of January 1st, in all American California schools, boys all the way through high school will be able, by law, to use the girls' bathrooms.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
To go into the girls' locker rooms, to showers, this is a further breakdown of the differences between male and female. This is a further effort to crush the individuality of even the two sexes. It's amazing.
It is a reprogramming of the computer, and if we operate at computer level in body consciousness, frankly, there is nothing we can do about this. It's moving our point of observation to consciousness, and becoming conscious and beyond body consciousness, and that's what wakes people up, and that's what the level that we need to be communicating.
You literally, moms and dads, have got to take your kids out of the government school system. You've got to disconnect the television.
These are all the major sources of programming the computer. It's about not just children, but it's about parents putting down this library of belief systems, mm-hmm. and their own programming, pushing it aside and putting a blank sheet of paper on the table and saying, hold on a second, I'm gonna look at the world from a point of view of complete open-mindedness, never mind all what I've been programmed to believe. Let me look at the world from a point of open-mindedness, as Socrates was supposed to have said, wisdom is knowing how little we know. And if you can look at the world from that perspective, it's much easier, mm-hmm. to get clarity and not have what you're looking at completely and totally edited by your preconceived idea of how the world is.
All true. And you don't have to find the truth in another media venue. You don't have to find it. If David's right, if you just put a blank sheet of paper in front of you and try to reconnect with that inner self that we were all born with, that has, of course, been locked away and damaged every step of the way by the controls. You'll realize you've still got it. It's in there. That voice is there. And that's what you need to connect with. Back to David, his new book, The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It, is now available at davidicke.com. They're shipping now, and get your order in right away. How do you like the way the book itself came out physically?
I was very, very pleased with it. What's a funny thing that happens is that all the book covers, going right back to the early mid-90s, have come to me as a picture, and often in that period where you're half awake and half asleep, I see a picture of the cover, and then I've got an artist friend, Neil Haig, who has this almost telepathic ability to read what I'm trying to get across, and he produces the covers. But the key thing about this book is it is a massive work of dot connection. It's the biggest work I've ever done, and probably will be the biggest ever. But it's about showing how A links to B links to C, because then the picture opens of and gives clarity to apparently incomprehensible things that happen in the world. Why did they do it like this? It's stupid. Well, it's stupid if your motivation is the good of humanity. But if you know what the real motivation is and the methods they're using to get there, then that apparently stupid and insane thing is absolute genius. You need the coordinate. People need the coordinates of where they're trying to take us and how they're trying to take us there. And once those basic coordinates are understood, you read reality and what's happening in the world in a completely different way, because your point of perspective has moved.
The book itself is how big, David?
It's 600 pages, and they're not small pages, and it's got about 300 illustrations.
Wow.
And a wonderful artist, David Deese, who I know you use on your website, has kindly allowed me to use many of his illustrations, which visually you can get across an understanding in a picture. Yeah. Picture paints 1,000 words and all that stuff. And so there's a lot of David's work in the illustrations and Neil Haig's work and stuff.
I think David is really in a class by himself. We have been fortunate enough to have him with us for quite some time now. He's absolutely a genius.
He is. And because you can make such a mighty statement in an illustration or a picture, you really can.
Yep.
And he's doing a great job getting a lot of understandings across with his art.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we have just about 7-8 minutes left, David. What do you want to talk about that I haven't touched on and you may want to bring up tonight?
Well, I think the most important thing to get across, and it's an area that I'm talking a lot about at the moment, is the difference between brain intelligence and heart intelligence.
Ah.
They are completely different. Brain intelligence is body consciousness. Heart intelligence is multidimensional connection. And if we can move our intelligence from the head to the heart, then we will transform everything. Because the heart is not just a thing that beats and all the rest of it. That's the physical expression of it. It is a connection. And it's a connection that doesn't think. It's a connection that knows. It's where we get our intuitive knowing from. It's where if we filter reality through the heart, that's when you see what's really being said as opposed to what the brain is hearing. The brain is very easy to program because it's body consciousness, it's computer consciousness. The heart connection is multidimensional consciousness, is the connection to out there. And this is why the heart intelligence would never want to harm anyone. It's brain intelligence that does all the mayhem. Heart intelligence just wants peace, it wants love, it wants harmony, because that's its state, that's its natural state. Brain intelligence is the one that goes around killing people and slaughtering people and manipulating people, and it's the brain level that is manipulated. On the heart level filters reality, so it can't be manipulated, because it's looking into this world. The brain intelligence is in this world and of it. Heart intelligence is in this world but not of it, and they are completely different points of observation in experiencing reality. And if we can move from brain intelligence to heart intelligence, this whole edifice of nonsense will collapse. It's so important that we do that.
The American political process, with Ron Paul obviously accepted, is one of the most tawdry displays of gangsters, criminals, losers, frauds, opportunists, phonies, manipulators that I have yet seen. If this is the best that America has to offer, I know you've had your problems in Britain as well.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
My God, look at these people.
Well, I've got a chapter or a dot in the book called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall, Who is the Most Corrupt of All? Which I go into all this and the background and to the Bush and the Clinton families and the connections between them, and this whole mafia that runs American politics. And it's basically a structure where you have the shadow people, as I call them, that are running the show, that are deciding who runs for president and who gets this job, who gets that job. And then you've got the mass of the fodder who are in various terms and in various levels blackmailed to conform through various ways, because of course these people make sure they know all about the background to people in Congress and the Senate. They identify who is able to be bought off financially, who will be bought off by this, who will go the way that they want because of that. And if all else fails, what else in their lives would they desperately not want to come out? And they do it that way. So you've got this system whereby the shadow people dictate who the people in real power are, as far as power goes within politics, and you also control the fodder through various means to go with the agenda. And so it's irrelevant. It has no relevance to taking humanity forward, the American political system, and nor does the British one, because we've just exchanged Blair Mark 1 for Blair Mark 2.
Exactly.
And we have Blair Mark 3 as leader of the opposition in case they need him. It's got so blatant now that it's not even subtle. They are just doing what they like in front of your face.
No stealth at all.
No, I mean, they're just not hiding it. Yeah, okay, no problem. You know, you've sussed it. All right, fine. So what?
See, they run this into supercomputers, and they know within, you know, plus or minus 3 or 4 percentage points how much they can get away with, what the reaction will be, and they're actually building now a supercomputer which is a total exact replication of the living planet Earth and all its people and every country, every social, geological, geopolitical, financial, economic factor that happens is being fed into this computer real time. So they have a whole second Earth, a duplicate clone planet that they can play with and manipulate and test and run operations on.
Yeah, I've been saying for years that they work through a computer system whereby they can, in simple terms, put in the outcome they want, and they will then be shown the sequence of events.
That's right. That's how a lot of fake research is done. Someone will be tasked with a goal, or here are the results we want. Now create the data to support it. Same kind of thing.
That's what we get with global warming, of course.
That's right. Last question. We have just about 2 minutes. Will they, David, the reptilian consciousness, the evil on the planet, whatever folks want to call it, will they take it all down with them rather than cede power to a realization, an awakening? Will they take it all down?
Well, that's so stupid. They probably would, because the thing is that they are in a state of fear of not surviving more than anybody. And so they're very frightened people. They seem to be arrogant and all-powerful, but they're very, very frightened people, especially at this time, because we have now the potential to awaken people to the point where the edifice of power comes down. In the end, what happens will be decided by how many people remain in body consciousness, i.e. staring into the headlights of the oncoming train.
Or the television.
It's the future, yeah. And how many become conscious and see through it. And we're at the point now where there's a fork in the road, big time, and we have to decide which way we're going to go, because the next few years are going to decide the outcome in this reality, and it's just one reality for a long time to come.
Are you going on tour in the States at any time soon?
Well, I'm getting together with some people at the moment. I'm going to talk in London a couple of times in May, and then I think I am going to go on the road through late 2008 and through 2009, yeah, and I probably will do some big events in America because, you know, fortunately, again, it's a great testament to the awakening that I don't even have to put my own chairs out anymore, so it's really exciting what's happening, and there's great potential for great change.
Well, it's great to see the new book out. It's always wonderful to talk with you. It's been a long time, and I remember those chairs full and amazing in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, there was two things on that tour. There was Santa Barbara and there was Vancouver, where people turned up. Everywhere else for 3 months they didn't, and I thought, where is this going? But you keep walking, you keep talking, you keep saying what you believe to be right, and eventually the world opens up for you.
Thank you, David. Great
Thank
to spend
you,
time with you.
Thanks,
take care. David Icke, live from England. And again, his new book is out. And just go to davidicke.com, and there it is. Okay, that's our program tonight. Thanks for choosing to spend your time here. And I hope you enjoyed it and learned something. We'll be right back with you tomorrow night.